I think Andy Reid is taking the game of offensive football to another level that people are trying to emulate in all leagues, junior high, high school, college, but JUCO, on down.
Do you credit Andy Reid for that, or do you credit Patrick Mahomes because he's able to do that?
I credit Andy Reid with that because Andy Reid did it with Randall Cunningham. Not Randall Cunningham, with Donovan McNabb. Yeah. I mean, he did some amazing things with McNabb and never won a Super Bowl. And I get they didn't win a Super Bowl. I understand all that. But Mahomes helps him to go out. Mahomes is running the game plan that Andy Reid created. But as far as football, I mean, I was just talking to him last night. It's like the just people in the coaching world and all that, they're just love Gruden and all with this unboxing that goes on. I mean, that's I'm thinking, is there anybody close between Altho Sankey in there? And to me, Goodell, I'm still Goodell's a pawn. He doesn't do anything for me.
That was our conversation yesterday here on the program.
I hate hearing my voice back. That's way too long. Can you make it 2 seconds next time?
Sure. Sound like Chewbacca a little bit.
That's what she said. Thank you.
I knew you were going to do it. We bring in John McClain now, who can weigh in on our question from yesterday. And, of course, John McClain is presented by Maple Street Biscuits. Wake up to WOW. So, John, the question was, who is the most influential person in football? I said Greg Sankey from the SEC. Joe said John Gruden because of all the social media following that he has now. What say you?
John Gruden, first of all, Greg Sankey has nothing to do with the NFL, and he's influential.
Well, it could be either one. So for college, I said Greg Sankey.
College is dwarfed by the NFL, and everybody knows it. And Greg Sankey, selfishly for the SEC, that's who he's paid for, and that's what he wants, what's best for. And the SEC is clearly the best conference and is the 800-pound gorilla and sits where it wants. But when it comes to football, there's only one, and that's the NFL. And Roger Goodell is by far the most powerful and influential person in the NFL. What he wants, he gets. What he's done behind the scenes, he gets what he wants. There's no owner who tells him what to do. No, that's not true. A lot of owners tell him what to do, but he does what he wants to do, and he wants to do what's in the best interest of the league, in the best interest for himself, because most of his contract is tied into bonuses, and that's why he makes like $60 million a year, and that's cheap. So the way the money has increased under his stewardship. And I've always thought the second most influential person is Jerry Jones, but Jerry can't even get another Super Bowl for AT&T Stadium. And usually it's outspoken color guys. Like if Nick Saban was still at Alabama, I would put him up there as one of the most powerful. But as far as the NFL, Gruden was influential when he was on Monday Night Football after he won his first Super Bowl. But after the racist emails, a lot of people were turned off by Gruden. And one of the reasons is because, you know, of course, a lot of black people were, but a lot of white people were too. And it was smart of Barstool to hire him because I think, based on what I've heard, Barstool appeals to young white guys. It would be less turned off by what Gruden said. But when Gruden was on Monday Night Football doing one of the most, if not the most popular draft segments, it was those quarterback things he did on ESPN that got so much attention. That was the height of his popularity and influence.
All right, so I want to ask you this on Goodell, because I don't disagree with you, but does he live, I mean, is there like a handful of owners that have his ear maybe more than others, and so therefore they influence him a little bit? Or do you think that this is all like, hey, I want 17 games, we're going to get 17 games. I want 18 games, eventually we're going to get that. Do you think that's all him, or do you think there are a handful of owners that maybe have a little more pull?
There are a handful of owners that he would talk to more than others because he trusts their opinion. There's a lot of owners who will call him up, and if they get him instead of one of his underlings, they'll tell him what they want about something, and he's got to pacify them. But the bottom line is, when he wants something done, like he'll reach out to to a team like the Green Bay on the tush push. Didn't work by 2 votes. I bet it's overturned next year. He wants reseeding, and because he didn't have enough votes, he tabled it. But I'm telling you, both of them are coming.
Talking to John McClain on the Chase and Big Joe Show. John, as far as X's and O's and influencing the game that way, who do you think is the most influential?
Oh, gosh. You guys were talking about Andy Reid. Andy got blasted constantly till Patrick Mahomes got there, and all of a sudden, he's a genius. He used to get blasted because of his clock management. If you ask him about it, he was so defensive, as all head coaches are. They don't mind you saying they're a bad coach, they ought to be fired, but boy, when you question game management, clock management, they get infuriated. And I would say today, John Harbaugh is very influential because of his consistency. He does it behind the scenes. And Andy Reid, of course, the guys who are usually influential are the ones who have great quarterbacks. The only great coach I have ever seen who didn't have a great quarterback was Joe Gibbs. He won 3 Super Bowls with 3 different quarterbacks. None have been mentioned in the same sense as the Hall of Fame. Well, Doug Williams was, but that'll not happen as a player. And does that make Joe Gibbs the greatest coach in history? I don't know, but all the others had the quarterbacks. And once you get that great quarterback and you start winning, like Sean McVay, and he's influential because of all the coaches that have worked under him that become head coaches. Andy Reid has had quite a few, but they usually bomb out because none of them got a quarterback. But today the coaching trees, the legacies, are important to the coaches. They take great pride in it. And considering the Chiefs are perennial Super Bowl contender, Andy's going to go to the Hall of Fame.
I agree on that one. John, let's talk current. What's going on now? Kirk Cousins, this is all just weird because I think like he's being held hostage. And I don't know what's going on here. The Falcons paid him $10 million. And if they keep him until the season starts, they've already paid him $100 million, yet they want to shop him. Where do you see this thing ending?
Well, I was told months ago he's not going anywhere. They got Michael Penix, who played, what, half the season and was really good. What if he has a sophomore slump? What if he suffers an injury like he had in college? If you think you're going to win your division, you better have a competent backup quarterback. Cousins wants to go somewhere where he can start. You know, their thing is, look, we paid you a fortune. We signed you, and yes, we drafted Penix, but we need to be prepared, and they know if they traded Cousins and then they needed a quarterback, Easton Stick is taking over. I can't imagine any team in his right mind would want to play Easton Stick. So I think this, people just automatically assume, well, the Steelers will trade for Kirk Cousins. Well, what if Kirk Cousins has to stay there? And he's not happy. He's not going to rock the boat. That's not what he's all about. But he signed the thing in good faith. Being held hostage, you know, he may look like that. You look at it that way. His fans may look at it that way. But the bottom line is they paid him a fortune. They can do whatever they want. And I would think if the Steelers don't get Rodgers, and I still believe they will, but if they don't, they would have to make a preposterous offer to get him. You may have to give up the number one pick to get him, because ordinarily, if you're going to trade somebody, you would have done that before the draft.
John McClain is with us. We will continue with him coming up next here on the Chase and Big Joe Show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game on this Wednesday, continuing our conversation with John McClain, presented by Maple Street Biscuits. Wake up to wow. John, the NFL.com has an article, basically 32 of the most underrated players for each team, and they named Amani Hooker for the Tennessee Titans. I found that to be interesting because of, you know, all the what they've done on offense and Cam Ward. But how important is it for a rookie quarterback to have a solid defense that they can trust to know that that might take a little pressure off of them?
Well, it's important, of course, but it's more important to have an offensive line and a running game. That takes more pressure off the quarterback than anything. And but if you're doing three and outs all the time, even the best defense is going to struggle. And I think they've done as well as they could possibly do in one off season to improve those areas. But if he doesn't have a running game and an offensive line that can open those holes, they're in big trouble.
John, I'm hearing more and more talk, you hear it usually in May and June, about preseason games. Ja'Marr Chase talking yesterday about how bad the Bengals are in the preseason and the slow starts and playing preseason games. Do we see a turn in more guys playing in the preseason now, or is it forever three games people don't care about?
I think it's three games people don't care about. But if you are the Bengals, you have to look at why they get off to slow starts every year. That includes offense, defense, the team. And maybe there's something to that. They need to play their starters more. Maybe they need to play them in that last game. And when I started covering the NFL in the 70s, 80s, really until there got to be a salary cap after free agency and everybody freaked out over injuries and how it would affect the team salary cap-wise, not to mention on the field, they changed. But before that, they would move it up to where the starters played a quarter, starters played two quarters, starters played three quarters, and they played four quarters in the last preseason game, and they were ready to go in the opener.
John, what was it like when they had six preseason games?
It was training camp, was a week with rookies. Then the veterans came in. Then the veterans had about 10 days before they started playing six preseason games, exhibition games, as they call them. And they were more competitive than they are now. They weren't just for rookies and mamas and daddies watching their kids play. I mean, they went all out no matter when it was, because you could have as many.
Did we lose John?
Did John get raptured?
It was a lot more fun to watch back then, Joe, than it is now.
Oh, I'm sure. John, our question of the day is, your all-time favorite NFL player who flew way under the radar, that if you brought his name up, people would be like, oh, I need to look that guy up. One of my all-time favorites, guys, was Jim Jensen for the Miami Dolphins. Love that guy. Did whatever it take to help his team win. Is there anybody that comes to mind when you think about favorite player that nobody really knows anything about?
They knew about him as a general manager, Ted Thompson. Ted Thompson was special teams captain for the Oilers. He played every special teams. Players talked about how valuable he was to them winning during the Love You Blue era, when they went back-to-back seasons losing at Pittsburgh, one step short of the Super Bowl. Nobody knew who Ted was outside Houston, and then all of a sudden he goes to the Packers, wins the Super Bowl, and everybody knows him as one of the best general managers ever, and the late, great Ted Thompson would be my guy.
Okay, so when you were covering him, and I'm curious about this, of players that, you know, go into coaching or go into the front office or whatever, did you have any inclination that he could be a guy like that, or is it just at the time he was a good special teams guy?
He was a great special teams player, great leader, and I thought at the time he'd be a coach. And no doubt in my mind, Ted Thompson would be a coach. And after Ted retired, he went into business here. And his best friend, Mike Reinfeldt, was working for Ron Wolf, the general manager in Green Bay. So Ron Wolf had a rule: if you were going to be a scout for them, you had to make $30,000 your first year. So they called Ted, brought him up there for an interview. Wolf liked him. He said, would you like to be a scout? We'll pay you $30,000. Ted said yes, and the rest is history.
Wow, that's a good start. When Floyd was coaching and then switched to the front office, did that surprise you?
Absolutely, it did. Floyd was known as Sarge because he was so tough on the linebackers. Jerry Glanville didn't have a defensive coordinator because he made all the calls. And then when Glanville, he didn't get fired. Bud let his contract run out. And when his contract ran out, he went to Atlanta. And Tommy Smith, Bud's son-in-law, came up with the idea of trying to keep him as a front office guy. And they went to Floyd to see if he wanted to do it. He went on and talked to Sally about it. And they're like, yeah. And when he took the job as being an assistant GM under Mike Kolovac, who treated him terribly because he thought he was a threat to his job, and Jerry Glanville, after he told Jerry, I'm not coming with you to Atlanta, Floyd got a box in the mail, and he opened it, and it was a black rose symbolic of his career in the NFL being killed.
I've never heard of that. That was from Glanville?
That black rose came from Glanville in Atlanta.
Oh, that is fantastic. John, great stuff as always. We appreciate it, and we will talk to you next week.
Guys, thank you very much as always.
John McClain joining us here on the program as he does every Wednesday at 9:30, presented by Maple Street Biscuits. Wake up to WOW. Ryan Blaney is scheduled to join us. He's running a little bit behind, so it'll probably be a little bit after the 10 o'clock hour. So we'll come back, reset our question of the day here on Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.